and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. A new show is opening this weekend that you may be interested in. It's called Come Hell and High Water. It's a new epic American play devised and directed by world-renowned Dominique Saran. It explores the forces of a flood using the structure of an oratorio built from song, dance, story, and character. The show runs from March 3rd to 5th at 8 p.m., and then on March 11th and 12th at 8 p.m., also Sunday matinees on March 6th and 13th at 2 p.m. If you'd like to find out more about this show, you can visit the website of the UC Davis Department of Theater and Dance. If you'd like to find out more about Dominique Sarand, well, then listen to this. Paris native Dominique Sarand was artistic director and one of the co-founders of Théâtre de la Jeune Lune from 1978 to 2008. He studied at the École Jacques Lecoq in Paris. Mr. Sarand has acted, conceived, directed, and designed, including sets, lights, and video, for most Jeune Lune productions for over 30 years, concentrating primarily on directing. He has staged several operas. Mr. Sarand's directing venues include Berkeley Repertory Theater, the La Jolla Playhouse, Yale Repertory Theater, and the American Repertory Theater, among many others. His awards include the 2006-2007 Best Production, according to various press organizations, for The Miser in Boston, Houston, San Diego, Minneapolis, and San Francisco. He's the winner of a 2005 Tony Award for Best Regional Theater, a 2005 USA Artist Ford Foundation Fellowship, and a 2009 Bush Foundation Fellowship. Mr. Sarand has been knighted by the French government with the Order of Arts and Letters, and we are honored to have him here in the studios of KDVS. Dominique Sarand, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming by. Well, what an interesting show this looks like. It's called Come Hell and High Water. I want to get into some of the details so that we can entice people to check it out with a reminder that the shows will take place at Celeste Turner Wright Hall, which is the main theater building on the UC Davis campus. But first, if you wouldn't mind, tell me a little bit about how it was that you've come to UC Davis and what your first impressions were of the campus and the people you got to work with here.
Well, I was invited by Della Davidson as part of the Granada in Residence artists. And she asked me about a year ago to come and join. And I suggested to do a creation, and she immediately said yes. So I was very pleased. It's really beautiful here. It reminds me a little bit of southern France, except it's raining a lot.
Right.
But it's the vegetation is gorgeous. And I like the campus. It's very pleasant.
Absolutely. Come Hell and High Water, it's my understanding that this show is infused with the spirit of the American South, including William Faulkner, as well as Southern genres of music. I know that you're interested in gospel, for example, Negro spirituals. So I'm wondering if the inspiration for this show that you've devised as well as directed, did it come from reading that you did in France, that you did when you were traveling the United States? I know that you've spent time in Houston, for instance, and I'm wondering if any of your time that you've spent in the South has informed your the imagination and the preparation to write this show.
No, it certainly did. I mean, as far back as my studies as a French high school student, of course, Faulkner was part of the necessary reads, as well as all the main writers of at least the last 20th century. And they had actually an enormous influence on my upbringing, as well as film, American film, traditional great American films. The story of Come Hell and High Water comes from a novella by William Faulkner and short novella called The Old Man, of course, as reference to the Great River. And it was a great vehicle for a thought we've had put on the wall for years, my collaborators and myself, about doing something that would be reminiscent of Katrina, the great tragedy, the great Greek tragedy, the great American tragedy. And, of course, because of its place, its particular place, which is, as we know, New Orleans and this extraordinary mix of cultures and journeys,
mm-hmm.
both in socially, but specifically music, in terms of birth of music,
mm-hmm.
or birth of new American music because of the mixing of its genres,
right.
Obviously. These were pure forms that came individually, whether from the Ivory Coast or from different regions of Africa, from Portugal, from France, from the Netherlands, and all traveled, the Acadia, came down and then got, there was this incredible clash of musical culture that gave birth to this, these great forms. So we were very interested in the Delta, and the music of the Delta. And Faulkner's particular style of writing, which is a flood in itself of words, was a is very particular syntax. It drives every actor crazy because you have to breathe at least five times before you end a sentence.
Right, right.
So the background is of course coming from this great event, Katrina, mm-hmm. and which was of such great tragic proportions. And I didn't want to do a show about Katrina, so to speak, because the Spike Lee did an amazing testimony, if we can call it this way. And it was particularly interesting because his documentary is so so much like him. He contemplates something so real and turns it into something fictitious because it's so exactly real. Its reality is beyond what we can conceive and predict. So after having seen his film, his long series, actually, I thought, okay, I shouldn't do something about Katrina in this way. I need to find a more poetic material. And having worked for years with an ensemble, it meant sense to start from a novella, to start from a writing existing script as a base, and then meet with the actors and develop the material and the both the musical material and the text.
Yeah, that's wonderful. If you're just joining us, Dominique Sorand is my guest. He is here with two of the actors from a brand new show that previews tonight and opens tomorrow called Come Hell and High Water. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. When we return, we'll talk a little bit more about the tragic elements of this new play, as well as how music plays an important part. This is KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis, and we'll be right back with more of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. I always love the conversations that we have when you all get to listen to jazz or a public service announcement at home. In the early days of this show, as my wife could tell you, I inevitably forgot to turn off my microphone, and so those were her favorite parts when they were unedited and somewhat less imperious conversations going on with lots of laughter here in the studio, and that's what we've been enjoying. I'm here in the studios of KDVS, and this is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour with a director and playwright, Dominique Sarand, as well as Afi Ayana, who plays a couple parts in this brand new show that we've been talking about, Come Hell and High Water, and Matthew Donovan. We will hear from Afi and Matthew in a few moments. But first, I'd like to delve a little bit further into Come Hell and High Water. It sounds to me, Dominique Sarand, that even though you started with source material, that there was a great amount of writing that you did after you came to UC Davis, and probably a great amount of writing that you were doing with your cast as the show continued to evolve and grow and become itself. Is that, would you say that's accurate?
Totally. That's it's a creative process.
Mm-hmm.
Rewrites. And beyond the writing part is the once you have the original, the first draft or the second draft, if you will, and you put it up on its feet, it very often resists. It wants to be told differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so the exercise is to try to find a way that the text somehow exists on stage. And so that's what we've been doing for a long time. You asked earlier about the influences, and I didn't quite respond to you. When I first came to the United States, I went and I toured immediately, and I toured the South quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, coming from directly from Europe, going to the South is like going to a very, very foreign place.
Yeah.
We know about New York. We understand about the major cities, Los Angeles. We have a sense of it. But you can't understand the Ozarks until you've been there. You can't understand Texas until you've been there. It's just a different world. It's an other world. And I was totally fascinated by it. And actually, the reason I went and spent so much time is because my manager at the time was basically managing musicians. And so he had groups of all kinds. And it was fun to go and listen to all these different musics. He would take me and say, "Go, come and listen to these great musicians." And that's how I discovered a whole part of the culture of the Delta, which I knew kind of, but wasn't aware of. And I was fascinated. And there is definitely a culture of the South.
Absolutely.
That is profoundly amazing.
I grew up in Washington, D.C., which is right between Maryland and Virginia, both of which were slaveholding states before the Civil War. And so one would think that having grown up in a city in the South, really it's the Mid-Atlantic, that that the sort of culture shock or the culture differences that you describe would not would not be so extreme for me when I would travel mm-hmm. through the South. But they were. I know exactly what you mean, in part because I've spent time in New York City, in Boston, in Chicago. But the South, which I really explored thoroughly on my first trip to California and then on subsequent car trips, it is a different world. It's rich. It's historically important. But it's but they're traditions that we're not often very thoroughly schooled in, depending on where it is that we're schooled. So there is a lot to learn. I was interested in what you were saying before about Katrina and the U.S. response to Katrina being the American tragedy. And I guess that historically, with the Greeks and perhaps with Shakespeare, for a tragedy to work, we have a character of a very high station who is associated with a particular place, so that when he falls, some part of the city-state also falls.
Or even George Bush?
We could think about George Bush, but I mean, we could also think about, you know, Oedipus or Hamlet, I suppose, as well, in terms of someone being associated with a place, and then what happens when the central character dies tragically.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, you brought up Bush, if you could say some more about Katrina and its aftermath as a tragedy, and if you sought to represent tragic elements in that original way of thinking about it in your new play, Come Hell and High Water.
No, definitely. There's definitely an influence, a tragic influence, which is very, very important. It's the base of the work, was the base. But tragic doesn't mean serious. Tragic is beyond. Tragic is can be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Tragedy can mean dance, can mean movement, can be mean celebration, means all kinds of things. But and it is tragic. It's something we cannot avoid, something that... I think my reflection on saying it's a tragedy is because in tragedy things happen because you cannot stop them from happening. And Katrina was those kind of things because it was obvious that the hurricane was going to hit. Everyone knew it was going to hit, and we didn't do anything about it. So it is a tragedy.
I like that. Dominic Sarand is my guest here. He is the director and the creator of a brand new show called Come Hell and High Water. Let's hear a little bit from the actors that he's brought with them, and so we can get a sense of what it is to be in this show. Afi Ayana is here, and she is currently transforming herself, her bio says, with an MFA in acting at University of California, Davis. She's been acting professionally in film and theater in the Bay Area for the last decade. Some of her favorite endeavors have been as a puppeteer for the Big Tadu puppet crew, devising theater for the nonprofit Mystic Family Circus, numerous seasons with the Mendocino Theater Company and San Francisco Shakespeare Festival. She's been an award-winning team member of the SF 48-Hour Film Festival, and her featured role in the independent film Everyday Black Man is now available to be seen on Entertainment One DVD, BET, and Centric TV. This coming spring. Afi Ayana, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you, Dr. Andy, for having us.
Absolutely. Good to have you here. So give me a sense from your point of view as one of the main players in this show. What sort of expectations did you have? How did the how were the first rehearsals different from, say, in past shows? What are some of the things that you most enjoyed learning from the productions thus far? That's a lot, isn't it?
That's a lot.
I should have written those down ahead of time.
But basically, my involvement in Come Hell and High Water is I'm one of the lead female choral members. I'm a jazz singer by trade. I study at the Jazz School Institute in Berkeley. So my involvement is definitely from a musical standpoint as well as from an acting standpoint. So to me, the music, one of the things that Dominique really came to help us understand through developing the piece is that the music, you know, at first we would have conversations about the piece, it being an oratorio involving dance and music and a tiny bit of puppetry and different things like this. You know, we had a conversation at one point, is the music just an underscore to the piece as it exists? And actually, it's very instrumental to creating the mood, to creating the aesthetic, to creating the whole, I'd almost say, like, the emotional feel of the piece. And so it's been really amazing working with, you know, some actors who are just actors that happen to sing and some people that are like Matt here, who's a great musician and a great piano player, a great singer. People at all different levels in figuring out how to craft music for the show. And we use everything from R&B to gospel to opera to Elvis to Mahalia Jackson. So it's been really great putting all of those different elements and then figuring out actually where they go in the text. because when Dominique first came and brought the script to us, it wasn't in this finished way, which is very different from the... It's different than with some of the theaters that I work with. You know, when you're working with Shakespeare, you come and the play is this, and occasionally maybe they'll cut out one long monologue or something like that if it doesn't make sense. But generally, you come with the play, and that's what you stick to.
Right.
Working with Dominique has been different, that we had, an interpretation of the short story, then a short novella by William Faulkner, and as he would bring the script to us, then nightly he was taking the rewrites and then sending them to his people and, you know, fellow co-conspirators in Minneapolis, and then coming back with different rewrites the next day and, you know, literally sitting for an hour and just going, well, what is the order of this monologue and how does this all fit together, which is very different. And normally most directors don't really give a hoot about your opinion,
right,
about the flow of how, you know, text or how the development of a piece goes. So it was amazingly co-collaborative in that sense.
And how about your own musical background and experiences? Were you able to make suggestions for musical directions that might work for a good addition to the play because of something that you had sung or been exposed to or discovered yourself as a musician?
Yeah, definitely. I felt that I had a lot of creative... freedom in that sense of being able to add my viewpoints or my ideas. I mean, especially because during the first few weeks of rehearsal, this has been all together about a 9-week rehearsal, 8-week rehearsal process, including the one I included the show coming up. During the first bits of production, we didn't have a musical director, so we were literally listening to recordings and then going, okay, immediately, and this was very different than the way I've ever worked before, and then Dominique would just immediately go, okay, who can sing this part? And normally I'm the kind of person where I have to listen to it and then sing it. He would actually just play the music and say, sing.
Right.
So you have to, your ear has to be very sharp, and you just have to jump right into the task.
It's almost like you're expected to be Paul Schaefer, right? That you hear a song, and then you just jump right into
exactly.
it. I can do that.
Exactly.
Right.
So.
That's wonderful. But I'm sure...
And she did.
Yeah. And I did.
Yeah.
Which
good
is
for
great.
You.
I mean, I'm glad that the last year of my... before I came to... I just started my MFA. I'm a grad student here at Davis. So my last year has been strictly in musical training as a jazz vocalist. So I've worked with theory, and my ear training is really up. And, you know, that's the way you learn. You know, say I'm working on an... I worked with a show where we did all... a version of Miles Davis's Kind of Blue album. And so when you're working with trying to, you know, just do a scat version of Wynton Marsalis' solo, you're working the same way, where it's just you play the solo 500 times.
Right.
You can sing along word for word with, you know, or whatever, syllable by syllable or sound by sound of that instrument. So it was that similar way.
So for you, then, it's probably a good thing that Dominique Seurat didn't arrive 9 months from now when your ear was less finely tuned.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds wonderful. What about like the fear and the trepidation and the uncertainty of what you're describing? Did you see this as exciting? Did you find it daunting? In other words, as you said, this is different from many shows that you had been on, and you kind of have to expect that the show's going to come together at the same time that the whole cast's understanding of their own parts and their lines would come together at the same time. Did you have faith that was all going to work, or did you ever have any late-night concerns?
No, actually, I did never have a fear that it wouldn't work. At some point, I was wondering, wow, you know, about... I think about halfway into the rehearsal process, we'd only gotten about a third of the way through the script, and I was going, wow, he really... You know, I knew we were in good hands. Obviously, Dominique has many credits behind him, and he has a very... I think the thing about working with Dominique is that he has a very clear vision, and he's very detailed in the working process. He knows exactly, you know, where he wants people to stand, why this doesn't work, or why we should try it a different way. So having someone with a very, very clear vision, it's not someone standing there going, oh, I don't know this works, and I don't know why this doesn't work. But
right.
Someone saying, okay, that didn't work, let's try it a different way. I just put my trust into that the process was fine. And actually, to me, it was actually a confidence-building skill
Yeah.
And just and trusting that. And but I know for some of the actors in the cast, it probably was a little daunting, and we did lose a few people along the way.
Yes,
you know,
we did.
Who weren't all of a sudden, you know, expecting that they were going to be part of a show and be expected to sing every song.
Right. Well, and I found in my own life that when I finally get used to doing things that I had formerly thought were too difficult or there are too many of them or whatever the case may be, that there's something exhilarating and gratifying about that.
Yeah.
And it's worth that the struggle and the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, well, what was I complaining about a year ago?
Right.
And I wasn't doing any of these things. And look what I can do now.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to suspend your disbelief.
Absolutely.
Now, the one little thing I'd like to add is,
sure.
When I came in, I had songs that we had talked about mm-hmm. with my collaborators, but they were basically a list of songs, and I didn't know where they were going to go. The feel was right, seemed right, the eclecticism was fantastic. But I was open, and a lot of times the actors came to me and said, why don't we sing this at this time? And we went, tried, and it worked, and we just
right.
said, so I had no clue where it would go, and that's part of the experience of working together.
And how nice that you're well seasoned at working with collaborators, so that when your actors turn into collaborators, you can work with that in a facile way.
Yes, I am, and I think that what Afi was just saying, which is, you know, the first 3 weeks I worked really slowly, and after 3 weeks I realized I have to go faster. But you have to create the vocabulary.
Right.
Between you and your collaborators, know which dance you're dancing together, and then things go faster. So it took a while, but here we are.
Yeah, we definitely picked up some speed and momentum along the way.
Yeah. Well, and from a teaching perspective, a good class can be like that too, where you want your students to be pushed in those first few weeks, because otherwise you're just retreading what they've already done. And then you can really pick up speed and you know, make some incredible progress once you push them and, as you say, develop that vocabulary. Well, the vocabulary of public radio requires that we present to everyone a public service announcement at this juncture, which is what we're going to do. And then when we return, we're going to hear from Matthew Donovan, another one of the cast members of a new play that previews tonight at the Celeste Turner Wright Hall on the UC Davis campus, and then shows the next couple weekends on Friday and Saturday nights at 8 p.m. That's the 3rd through the 5th, and then the 11th and 12th, with Sunday matinees on March 6th and 13th. To find out more, visit the website for the UC Davis Department of Theater and Dance. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're talking this afternoon about Come Hell and High Water. It's a new show devised and directed by Dominique Sarand, who is our Granada artist in residence here at the UC Davis campus and also a Tony Award winner. Matthew Donovan is also here in the studio. He was last seen in UC Davis's production of the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. He'll be graduating this year with a degree in dramatic art. He's also a photographer with his own business at Matt ydphotography.com. And Matt, I checked out your website. You've got some great photography there. You also did the photographs for the most recent David Shakespeare Ensemble production of Twelfth Night.
Yeah,
in preparation
I did.
For that. That was great. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You play convict in this new show, Come Hell or High Water. Do you want to say a little bit about your character and about your experience with this play?
Yeah, he's a bit naive. Actually, he's very naive. Never really had experience with women before. He's been living in this prison his whole life, and he's at a point where he's told to go fetch this woman in a tree and a guy in a cotton house, and they give him a boat that he can't row in, and that's the journey of this piece. And you know, I think as he starts to discover things about himself and about the land, that the audience starts to see that too, so they kind of go on the journey with them.
That's wonderful. I'll ask you a similar question to the one that I asked Afi before, and that is, tell me about the sort of things that you learned from this production. You're a graduating undergraduate here at UC Davis.
Yes.
So you had to mix in this challenging 8-9 week rehearsal schedule with classes and your photography business and so forth. So I'm sure that was also one of the challenges for you.
Yeah.
Everything that you had to learn. And then kind of learning afresh with each new rehearsal, especially in the early weeks.
Absolutely. It was what was interesting about the audition process, which I was thinking about as Afi was speaking, was that we had our initial auditions, and then we had our callbacks, and he had narrowed it down to about 20 people. And at our callbacks, we thought he was going to narrow it down to about 10 people until he said, "All right, this is my cast." And we all kind of sat there and looked around, and he's like, "This is my cast. These are the people I want in the show, but I just don't know what part I want you all as yet." So we were all cast in the show, so for all we knew, we were going to be, you know, convict number 3 to the right. I don't know. You know, so it was interesting, and I think that it let the pressure off a lot for all of us, because I knew about Dominique's background and all that, and it's kind of intimidating at first when you go and stand in front of this guy and you're like, "I don't know." And then now that I know Dominique, it's like, "Oh, okay, well, it's just Dominique," you know. So, but it let the pressure off, and we all were able to just kind of get to know each other. And I think Dominique got to see things in us that maybe we weren't able to show in the audition.
Right.
And in that, I think that's when he started to form his cast and saw what he wanted, and so. It's been really interesting, the collaboration process, and this kind of work is something that I'd like to do eventually later on when I have more experience. And I was just telling Dominique earlier this afternoon that I'd like to form my own rep company and do this kind of work where everyone has a say and it's not this hierarchy.
Right.
And I think the director, I mean, in the end, Dominique will always have the final say, because Dominique, with his experience, we trust him. I think when you're cast in a show and you're agreeing that the director will have the final say, but I think that the fact that we're able to talk about it and he's given us just that freedom to talk about it has been just really awesome, really something very different than I'm used to. So
wonderful. Well, in your preparations to play this character, did you read things? Did you watch that film by Spike Lee we were talking about before? Did you listen to music? Did you listen to accents? How did you do some of the preparations in addition to learning lines and songs and so forth?
Right. Well, it was funny because reading the story, he has the naivety he reminded me of Forrest Gump, and and it was hard because even in the process, I kind of started doing the Forrest Gump kind of thing, and we tried to stray away from that just because I think that we wanted this to be a separate story, but he and plus Forrest Gump was from like Mississippi, and the convict is from Kansas or something like that, so Brian and I, who he plays the old man, which is he's the older version of my character.
Mm-hmm.
We sat down and we went online and looked and through a bunch of accents and stuff, and we tried to agree on an accent. And it was interesting. It's just I've never really done such deep research into like a character or something like that.
Right.
So, yeah.
I think Forrest Gump was from Alabama, but it's right next door.
Oh, he's from Alabama. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
but it's interesting, you know, a Kansas accent versus Alabama or Mississippi accent. It's not something that a lot of people from Davis would be able to distinguish the two.
Mm-hmm.
So how fun to do that research, but also to have a collaborator to play the one character and know that there's got to be some matching up there.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that. The older you is a graduate student and a senior graduate student here at UC Davis.
Yeah.
Tell me about other things that you learned from that collaborative process.
Well, it was funny because at first I was like, okay, so is it going to be you watching me and then you're doing the things that I do, or is it going to be me watching you?
Right.
And so I think that's we had to come to this balance of finding things that we did similarly and things that we did differently. And Dominique sat down with us in the beginning monologue of the show, and we're sitting next to each other. And we went through it really slowly and just kind of find moments. And things I hadn't noticed that I even did, Dominique pointed out and said, that right there. And it was just a quick little snicker or a look. And so we kind of, there's this moment in the show where we both make that look. So I think it's just the fine details that make it so interesting to watch. And even just from the friends that have come and seen just the tech rehearsals from this last week, they said what makes the show so interesting is that it's so simple, but it's so beautiful in its simplicity.
Right.
So I think that makes us all really proud. I mean, we didn't really, I mean, you're in a process for so long and you kind of just forget, and then finally it's in front of people and you're proud of it because people are able to see things that you hadn't seen before.
Absolutely. Well, let's remind folks what we're talking about. It's a new show called Come Hell and High Water, and it has been directed and conceived by one of my guests. His name is Dominique Sarand, and he is our Granada Artist in Residence this quarter, as well as a Tony Award winner. And he, with a cast of originally 20, maybe not quite 20 anymore, but almost, has put together this show that that opens this weekend, though there is an opportunity to see the preview tonight. And Matthew Donovan, do you want to say something about the preview? And say just a little bit more, as you've started to do, why people should come see this show.
It's not an in-your-face look at Katrina. I think it's just a really beautiful, as Dominique was saying, it's a really poetic look at it. And we're trying to stay away from
documentary.
The documentary, and just trying to look at it just as a beautiful story. And yeah, a lot of people have come and they've cried. So if you want to come and cry, I'm just kidding.
Well, and what you're talking about too is an authentic emotional connection with an audience, which is rare, whether you're talking about a movie or a play, and something that one of the reasons that we turn to art and to theater is to have that connection. And to also imagine the lives of other characters, which is, I'm sure, something that you all present very well.
Yeah.
Well, good. The show opens this weekend, as we've said, and we're just about at the end of this segment. Dominique Sarand, you've heard what some of your actors have said. Do you have any closing words of wisdom or suggestions or invitations for listeners to this radio show?
Yes. No, first of all, I've been very, I'm very grateful and to have been working with very talented young artists. It's something you don't find when you're working, start to work professionally. People, of course, have acquired experience, but they've also, in the midst, lost their freshness of invention. And so it's a great pleasure to do this with students. And hopefully, like Matt was just saying, or like Afida, she's a jazz singer, so it's in her bones. to keep that freshness going, to be inventive, to work with other people, to work in ensemble, to do creation. Because after all, the arts today in America is about today, in some way or another. So support the arts and support your public radios.
I certainly agree with that. Well, Dominic Sarand, Afia Yana, and Matthew Donovan, all representing Come Hell and High Water, a show that previews tonight, opens tomorrow, and can be seen at Celeste Turner Wright Hall, the main theater building here on the UC Davis campus.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Good to meet all three of you. Well, stick around, ladies and gentlemen, because after this public service announcement, we will be joined on the live line, I believe, by Crystal Cheney, and she will tell you about another event coming up this weekend that you may want to investigate. My name is Dr. Andy. This is KDBS, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.
Filled with common household allergens can cause headaches, allergies, and even asthma. Here are a few tips to help keep the air in your home fresh. Ventilate the attic and crawl spaces to prevent moisture and mold buildup. Also, use an air dehumidifier or air conditioner to control indoor humidity. To help clean air circulate, change air conditioning and furnace filters every 2 months. It's also important to service your heating and cooling systems regularly.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I'd like to remind you that this evening is Poetry Night here in the city of Davis, and none other than Random Abilities, who's been on this radio show a couple times before, the great hip-hop poet, two-time Sammy Award-winning MC, a man who has performed in small clubs and before huge audiences of more than 1,000 people, with not only his music, but his spoken word poetry. He brings a tremendous amount of energy to any performance and makes everyone grateful that they got to spend some time with him. He is the musician behind a number of CDs. His most recent is called Skill Before Swagger. He'll be performing tonight, starting around 8 or 8:30 at Bistro 33, 226 F Street here in the city of Davis, as part of the Poetry Night reading series. To find out more, visit poetryindavis.com. Crystal Cheney is my next guest. She is a poet that I got to know when she was a graduate student here at the University of California, Davis. In addition to her undergraduate degree, she has a master's degree in creative writing poetry from this university, graduating in 2008. It was in 2008 that she started working at Diogenes Youth and Family Services. She had done a lot of other work in addition to that, including teaching book clubs for 9th and 10th graders. She designed that program to help ESL students with SATs and college preparation. She's done a lot of important work, but I think that her work with at-risk teens as part of the Diogenes Youth Services has been one of her most important accomplishments, and it brings her back to this radio show to tell us about an upcoming spring community talk. So I'm very pleased to reintroduce her to all of you. Crystal Cheney, welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you, Dr. Andy.
It's great to have you here. Before we find out about what you have coming up with this spring community talk, why don't you tell us about the location and the purpose and the general goals of Diogenes Youth Services?
Well, we are sort of on the Rancho Cordova side of Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
9719 Lincoln Village Drive is our address. You can find us through our website, DiogenesYouthServices.org. We do free counseling for families. Our main focus is 12 to 17-year-olds, that at-risk teen sort of stage. We have a teen support group, a parent support group. We have a domestic violence group. We do anger management counseling, drug and alcohol counseling. We also have a shelter for homeless and runaway teens and a group home, and we do community events like the one we're doing on Friday.
Wonderful. Good for you. What would you say is the most important support or kind of support that you offer the teens that you get to work with?
Well, obviously health and safety is the biggest thing. So every once in a while we get teens who are truly in a dangerous situation, and we can provide a shelter, a safe place for them to be while we're figuring out what to do about the rest of their situation. For families, especially the parent support group, I think parents are really starting to feel like they're running out of resources, out of help to handle their teen crisis. And teenagers, as you know, I mean, they're sort of, they're adults, except for that they're a little bit less rational.
Yeah.
And it gets very tricky. And our counselors are just an amazing staff of people who can help parents deal with all sorts of issues that teens have, from drug and alcohol issues to truancy issues to mixed families where they're is a new step-parent around or a new, you know, step-brother, step-sister, all kinds of things that come in that are sort of unexpected that families need a little bit of extra help with.
Absolutely. Well, what is this spring community talk that's coming up?
Well, our topic for the spring is teens and technology. What we've been hearing a lot, parents come in and they want to know, when should my kid have a Facebook? How should I monitor it? How should I talk to them about it? How should I make rules? So we're going to have a community talk. Six of our counselors will be there to present small issues within this topic, and they'll be doing question and answer sessions. So anybody who's got a teen or has a child who will be a teen pretty soon in the future, it's a good for them thing to come to just get an idea of how to handle this when it comes up.
Absolutely. And at the shelter itself, I know that you've worked there for a number of years.
Yes.
How do technological issues come up? I know that teens that come to the shelter, I'm sure that many of them are have the same situation that the students you and I have taught at UC Davis know, and mm-hmm. That is that technology pervades every element of their lives, that Facebook is always on the computer, that they're getting texts on their cell phones. How does that change somewhat when they come to your shelter? And what sort of conversations about technology have you had with some of your clients?
Oh, yes. Well, the first thing is just a safety issue. There's a lot of adults. There's a lot of just sort of predators, especially when teens are in sort of a delicate situation. It seems like those particular people looking to take advantage of them, they can see it, they can hear it, they can feel it, that teen is vulnerable. So you want to really talk to them, and I do this on a regular basis, about if you have a funny feeling about an adult or something that they're asking you to do, if they're asking to meet you or get pictures of you, you really want to talk to an adult immediately, because somebody else needs to take control of that situation. A lot of times, teens just don't know how to say no. It doesn't occur to them that something that feels strange is probably a bad situation.
Yeah, certainly there are a lot of creepy people out there, and I guess one of the best things we can do for teens is teach them how to stay away from such people.
Yes.
Crystal, we're going to take a quick break so that I can read that public service announcement that I promised you. And then when we come back, I'm going to ask for some of the details so that people, if they have teens or are teens and want to find out more about your Diogenes Spring Community Talk, they can know just what to do.
Okay.
So we'll be right back with that. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. And this is Dr. Andy with an important message. Rio Villa Beach Resort Bed and Breakfast asks everyone to please give blood generously. By doing so, you may be saving a child, a surgical patient, or even the life of an accident victim. Remember, blood donors protect their families as well. There's no greater gift that you can give than the gift of life. This important reminder is brought to you by the concerned staff at Rio Villa Beach Resort Bed and Breakfast in Monte Rio on the Russian River. You may visit them online at riovia.com on the air because they care about the people in this community. Crystal Chaney is here. She's a graduate of UC Davis with a master's degree in creative writing, poetry. She's someone I've talked to about poetry about poetry in the past. And she will be making an appearance this evening to see none other than Random Abilities perform at 8 o'clock at Bistro 33's Poetry Night. I'm looking forward to seeing her then. But she's also doing important work as the work that she does for Diogenes Youth Services. And Crystal, could you tell us again some of the details of this event that's coming up, and especially when and where if we want to participate?
Yes. It's this Friday on March 4th at 6:30 p.m. It's at the Cordova Recreation and Park District, which is 10700 Ambassador Drive in Rancho Cordova.